Just about 28 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday morning, and we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a member of the board at Creation Moments, and a biochemist by trade, but by vocation. His training, his experience in pharmaceuticals is what really attracted us to him. No, it was actually his membership in Creation Moments that attracted. But it's been 10 years now, Don. Dueling philosophies here. We have a Mercola article that you came up with that talks about basically health concerns across the globe and in this country having to do with obesity and processed foods and sugar. And it mentions genetically modified food almost incidentally. And another article that says farmers are crying, striving, struggling to get genetically modified seeds so they can grow more crops and feed starving populations. Let's start with the Mercola article. Obesity, it says 70% of the American diet is processed food, and 70% of the crops grown in the U.S. are genetically modified crops. How does that set us up for success or failure?
Well, it depends on how, you know, genetically modified obviously means you're doing something with the genes. You're either adding something or you're enhancing something. But most people understand genetically modified is we've added genes into a seed crop, for example, that aren't naturally there.
Well, I understand there's two general classifications of genetically modified seed. One is anti-weeds, and the other is disease, and the other is insects, so that your crop won't be ravaged by either of those things. And there are now hybrid seeds that have characteristics of both. But the goal is larger harvests. But the byproduct is what? Poor health? Long-term disease? Does that result from genetic modification?
Yes and no. I mean, it could be indirectly. For example, the two general categories are herbicide-tolerant modification, and most of that is in the past has been glyphosate. There's other herbicides out there now, and so you make the plant tolerant of spraying glyphosate or Roundup on it, so you kill the weeds, but you don't kill your corn or soybeans
a conversation about glyphosate, and but now you say there are others. Have they solved that problem so that glyphosate is no longer needed?
No. And it's still a big issue, and so now there's lawsuits against Monsanto, who actually originally developed it, and then Bayer bought the product, and so now there's lawsuits, cancer lawsuits against the use and the effects of glyphosate. And the problem with that, I mean, it's soy, maize, cotton, canola are the primary crops that have been modified like this. And the problem is, for example, on canola, they spray the fields at the end of the season with glyphosate right before you harvest the kernels, the canola itself. And so you're bound to get some, glyphosate leakage into your seeds, which then you process into oil. And guess what's in your oil? Well, it's glyphosate, and so you internally are taking that in.
And, of course, that's used in all kinds of processed foods.
It is. And not to mention corn. I mean, they do the same thing with corn, and you got corn chips and corn this and
corn starch,
meal,
yeah, and all that.
You got all of that, and it's got traces of glyphosate in it, at least the genetically modified ones. So that's one
Well, there's also a legal side. I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that much of Europe, if not all of Europe, has made using genetically modified seed against the law.
Well, it used to be that way. I'm not 100% sure that every country is doing that. It may be certain types of products that they've banned and not used. And other countries have tried to, other, you know, poorer nations or developing nations, we would say, have tried to do the same thing and ban these products as well. And that will lead us into the second article in a minute. But I do want to talk about the other way of genetically modifying crops, and that is insect-resistant gene that is inserted into the crop, into the seeds, and it's referred to as BT because it is a chemical that is made that is basically in essence a natural herbicide. I mean, a natural insecticide, and kills insects that are trying to bore into the corn, for example, the corn borer. And but the problem with BT, and this has been known for years, is that it causes heart issues and obesity in even in children that eat, BT corn, for example. The protein that's made through this gene is not digestible, and so it winds up getting into your blood system, and then it causes havoc eventually in people. So that's not good either. And then there's this third gray area that you're not necessarily inserting foreign genes, but you are doing hybridization with maybe a wild strain, and we do this in the grape industry and the vineyards. They have done this. For example, if you have a wild grape varietal that is resistant to a particular type of bacterial infection or insect, which is called Pierce disease, then we hybridize that, the native varietal, with the French varietal, and ultimately hope to come out with a French tasting wine or a good quality wine grape, with the property of it being resistant or tolerant, if you will, of the bacteria that causes the Pierce disease. So is that genetic modification, or is it your traditional farming techniques of hybridization? And we do this with animals, for example. We want animals with certain type of characteristics, so in the breeding process, you breed a certain genetic characteristics by selecting the animals that you want. For example, in Israel, a red heifer. That is more acceptable because you're not inserting new genetic information into your final product or your final seed. It's already available in nature, and you're just basically taking that information and putting it into another organism.
You make it sound harmless, but we know, for example, with breeding in certain breeds of dogs have been overbred, and you're getting characteristics that you don't want despite your good intentions. Does the same thing happen in food crops? I mean, can you overdo it, this hybridization?
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah, you can overdo it. I mean, you sure can definitely overdo it. I mean, in corn, the big corn these days has got multiple copies of genes. It's the natural gene, but they have multiple copies in the hybrid, so that you have big ears of corn instead of the shorter, maize or plants that were there from the native point of view. So is that, you lose nutrients, I think, when you certainly go overboard like that. And so it's, you know, God created things a certain way, and we start messing with them too much, then we have other issues. In the dog case, for example, they may be susceptible to more diseases, or they may have back problems, or, you know, vertebrae problems or stuff, something like that, or ear infections or this or that. That the native, your hound, you know, doesn't
have. And the drawback here is that it may take generations to realize that ramification, that mistake, that hybridization error that was made two generations ago. Or in the case of human beings, that could be decades and decades before you see the problem.
It could be. And, you know, with glyphosate, it took a while for some of these conditions to show up, and you know, fertility issues or birth defect issues in women, for example, and cancers, you know, issues that are now showing up in people who have to deal with the product on a regular basis, like the farmer, for example, or the farm worker who isn't properly dressed in handling dangerous materials. But, you know, we're eating this stuff, we're modifying the food crop, and we're saying, okay, now we have a, you know, disease-resistant plant. And this is a good thing because we can plant more. We don't have to spray with dangerous herbicides, for example, or dangerous fungicides or, you know, pesticides and things like that. We can just let the product grow, and we can manage the food crop a lot easier, and hopefully there'll be, you know, we have a greater yield.
Okay, here's the dark side of that problem. You've got GMO seeds being manufactured by a limited number of gigantic corporations. The price is high. Farmers in poor areas of the world, I'm thinking Africa primarily, maybe parts of Asia, can't afford that seed, or the seed is illegal for them to use, and their people need more food. How do we tackle that problem? Because they need the increased harvest they get from GMO crops.
Well, they think they need the increased harvest that they get from GMO crops. That's, yeah, so that's the issue. That's the second article, by the way.
Yeah, I'll get a link to both these articles in the chat window in a while here. So
that we're transitioning into. And, yeah, so there are certain benefits that, you know, we said, well, you got, you know, you can get a bumper crop if you use some of these products. Yes, the seeds are going to be more expensive, but because you're getting a higher yield, then you benefit overall by still making a profit, let's say, off of your crop. Whereas if you had a native seed, for example, and you planted that, and you've got some, you know, your yields aren't quite as high, and then you have to start using some of these other ag chems in order to control the pest and the weeds. Then, you know, you've got other issues associated with that. It boils down to really good farming techniques. Doing things, for example, that enhance the growth of plants to start off with, to make sure that your soils are properly prepared in the first place, that, you know, the soil, often people don't think about the soil when they plant something in the ground. They say, well, this is just a substrate, you know, to allow the roots to grow. But the soil is very, very important. And you've got live organisms in the soil, bacteria and fungus in particular, that are either beneficial to the plant, or they're not beneficial to the plant, or injure the plant. So having properly prepared soil goes a long way to helping to eliminate some of these ag chems that farmers have gotten used to using, you know, they save money just by having a more organic farming and putting, for example, certain types of funguses down in your soil to enhance your soil, even using low-cost additives, for example. If you have hard clay soil, you can add volcanic sand to that soil, and it makes it much more productive than had you not used it. And that's just, you know, that's just one simple product. And so if we teach people some of these more, you know, what we would call organic type of techniques, they have healthier plants, and healthier plants resist diseases. It's the unhealthy plants where you're putting down artificial fertilizer, these salts, for example, into the ground, and then the plant gets stressed because you don't have the right fungus living in your soil, and you may have an overpopulation of a certain bacteria, which is detrimental. And so the plant still struggles. It finds its nitrogen and its potassium and its phosphorus, but it doesn't transport those elements into the plant as efficiently had you done proper soil preparation.
Does this result because people are trying to grow crops where crops weren't meant to be grown? I mean, I think of areas of the United States where the soil, at least historically, has been black and rich and very productive in the Midwest, the Dakotas and Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, the breadbasket of the country. Now, that situation may have changed with the comparatively recent introduction of the chemicals and genetic modification and so forth. But if the soil is not ready, I'm thinking now again of a poor farmer in Africa. If he's located where it's difficult to grow food, maybe he should find another business.
Well, that's one solution. But you know, if anything grows, for example, you can use the natural materials that are there to improve your soil. You know, you can do composting. You can take, for example, the Indians, and we have thousands of years ago, the Indians used to make it's like charcoal, but we call it today biochar. But it's basically burning wood in the absence of oxygen, and you can do that by burying it. And this is kind of the same technique that they use for making charcoal. But biochar has the same similar properties as this lava sand that I was talking about earlier, in that it helps retain the nutrients in the soil. It helps retain the moisture in the soil, and it helps crops develop in soils that are not ideal. No soil is ideal when you initially start off, and even in your garden, even in your own personal gardens, you've got to start amending it with good types of amendment, compost being the most the one, and then adding microorganisms that are going to enhance your plants. And then if you do that over a period of time, your soil becomes richer and richer, and you take that maybe dried brown or red clay and turn it into the dark, rich soil that we have in the Midwest. If you have sandy soils, you're going to have a problem because it's not going to retain water. But you can improve any soil with the right techniques. So instead of, these folks, for example, in India that are trying to use the genetically modified, farmers are actually revolting against the government in some areas to use genetically modified products. And the government says, no, you can't do that. They destroy the crop, and then they put the farmer in jail. We should be, if people really cared about the planet and really cared about our food, We would do the more organic type of farming and, you know, have livestock, for example. Livestock, you know, obviously produces pre-digested grass or plants that is very good as a soil amendment. And so,
well, we've got the climate going for us. Increased CO2 levels have a bright side too, and that is food production. And you mentioned India; they're having record food production because of the increased CO2 concentration in the atmosphere. It sounds to me like you're saying knowledge training is really the answer to this, not GMO.
Yeah, I think we've gone way too far in trying to modify these plants through genetic modification that wasn't really intended to be there. The natural seeds and products can be successful with them with correct farming techniques. It may take you a little while.
We actually get some farming techniques from the Bible, don't we? Agricultural processes that they used ages ago that seemed to work for them. A pattern of planting and harvesting.
Planting, harvesting, having animals. I mean, you know, the sheep or the goats or the combination of the sheep and the goats and the cows and these type. I mean, even areas that are now arid, they're finding that, well, okay, there's some plants on the arid, you know, ground. I mean, some plants are just wanting to grow on bare earth. So let's start putting animals on it. And when they started putting animals on it, pretty soon they've got tremendous, they got more grasslands, for example, and trees start to form. And it changes the desert into not necessarily a forest, but an area where now you start having rain because you've got, you know, you got a darkened earth with the vegetation on it instead of a reflective, sand. And do you change the climate simply by going back to the earlier principles of let's have some animals, let's start improving the soil through that, and you completely change the environment.
So the answer really is trusting what God gave us and getting back to natural farming, and maybe that means a change of lifestyle as well for lots of us. Let's see us pull that off.
Yeah,
before the whole thing collapses, how do we fix it? There's the mystery there. Don Clark,
yes,
a member of the...
Things,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, we want things too easily. We've gotten used to doing things the easy way. And
instant gratification, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes the old ways are the better ways.
I think so. Don's a member of the board of Creation Moments. I want to mention their websites as a website to you. It's creationmoments.com. That's Moments, plural, creationmoments.com. There you'll find an archive of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation, including some agricultural tips, I'll have you know. There's all kinds of topics covered in there, and it all relates to the way God made things to work. And the more we can learn about that, the better off we will be. Don, thanks very much. Again, appreciate your visit and your expertise, and we'll look forward to next week. Oh, wait, what? Yep, next week we will have a show, so we're fine. Okay.
We have a show?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. We'll see you then.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Very good. So long.
See you, Don.